where the title of this year is Successful and Unsuccessful Kiruv Outreach of Rome and Noach, a Study in Contrast. If we studied the Parshas HaTorah that we've recently been learning, we see that Noach was unsuccessful in bringing other people close, and Avram was successful. And the purpose of this year is to show, number one, how this is demonstrated, that Noach was unsuccessful and Avram was successful, and also the reasons why. And I think that we will see that there are two reasons why Noach was unsuccessful and Avram was successful. So let us begin this year with discussing the Teva, the ark that Noah built, which we all know he built for 120 years. So first of all, the Ramban tells us that if we think into the Teva, we will see that this was really a very small boat. And if we think of all the animals that had to fit in, two of the non-kosher animals, seven of all the kosher animals, you're talking about giraffes, and elephants, and all kinds of creatures from the whole brie of the whole creation. So if you start thinking into it, you realize, says the Ramban, that really you would need a fleet, or many fleets of, we were all involved in the Intrepid, which are trying to get out of the mud. You'd need fleets and fleets of aircraft carriers like the Intrepid to house all of these various animals from all over the world. And how is it possible that a boat which had the dimensions of 300 long and 50 wide and 30 high, and it came to one amma on top, how could such a relatively small boat handle all of these occupants? And the answer, says the Ramban, of course, that this was a ness. It was a miracle. So the Ramban then asks a question: if it was a miracle, as my Rebbe Reb David Kronglass, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, the Mashgiach of Yeshivas Ner Yisrael, put it many years ago, he said, "Why didn't Noach just put them all in a suitcase? If you're already involved with a miracle, so make a bigger miracle. What do you have to have even a boat of these dimensions?" So the Ramban answers that Hashem operates normally, it's operated with Nes Nister. There's two kinds of miracles: Nes Nigla, revealed miracle, and Nes Nister, a hidden miracle. And Hashem operates in general with a hidden miracle, which means for the people who were living at that time, and B, even for us who are learning Chumash, if it would say that Noah took all the animals in a suitcase, we jump out of our seat. I mean, that's an open miracle. So, and the people at that time, if they would see Noah constructing a suitcase for 120 years, they would say also, how are you going to fit all the animals in a suitcase? This would be an open miracle. Hashem, that takes away from a person's bechira. It takes away from a person's free choice. Because it shows, there's no dispute that there must be Hashem who's making those miracles. Hashem operates with a hidden miracle. And the hidden miracle is that there was a boat, and unless you think into it, the boat, you realize that it was a miracle. But if you don't think into it, you gloss over it. Yeah, there was a boat, and the animals fit in. And even the people there, okay, I see a boat being built here. Yeah, the animals will fit in. That's more of a hidden miracle, and that's how Hashem operates. This is the pshat of the Ramban, because Hashem doesn't want to take away from human free choice an overwhelmingly golui, a miracle that's done before Hesi, which is done openly, takes away from man's free will. Okay, the question that needs to be explained is, good, Hashem had to build a boat, he wanted to hide the miracle, but why specifically did he have these dimensions, as we mentioned, 300 long, 50 wide, 30 high, coming to a point on top of one amma? An amma, by the way, is around 2 feet, so it was 300 long, 300 ammas means 600 feet, 50 wide means 100 feet wide, 30 high means 60, approximately 60 feet high, and one arm on top approximately coming to 2 feet on top. Why specifically these dimensions? So I think I've mentioned it in Shiurim in the past. There's a beautiful pshat which the Or Gedaliah of Gedaliah Shor Zecher Tzadik Livracha brings down from one of the early great Hasidic masters. And he says the following pshat. The Nachash HaKadmoni, the snake that enticed Chava and Adam to eat from the Eitz Hadas, his name originally, the way Hashem created him, was he was called Ches, the letter Ches. And he represented evil in the world. There's also a spiritual entity, a Malach, an angel, which also represents evil in the world, and he's known as the Samach Mem. That's how he's referred to, the Samach Mem. His name is the two letters Samach Mem. We know him today as Samoel. How do we get to Samoel? Because Hashem said, I can't have... Hashem created a world with choice, good and evil. But to make this spiritual entity only with the Samach Mem evil, it's going to be too... Just like Hashem doesn't do a Nes Nigla, a open miracle, because that would tilt it to the good. If you would have such a powerful spiritual entity, Samach Mem, totally Ra, the world would be tilted to bad. And Hashem wants to give you free choice in the middle. So to counter it, Hashem put Aleph Lamed, Kale. That's Hashem's name. So the Aleph Lamed counters the Samach Mem, and that's why his final name is called Samoel. The Ches of Nachash is evil. To counter it, Hashem took the Nun of Adni, Aleph Dalet Nun Yud, that's Hashem's name, Ado, you don't want to say the whole name, Hashem's name, and the Nun of Adni, and also he has a name of Shakai, Shin and a Dalet and a Yud, which we don't want to pronounce the Dalet either, we pronounce it Shakai. And he took the Shin of Shakai, the Nun of Adni, and he surrounded the Ches, now you have the word Nachash. That is the explanation, so that there should be a balance between bad and good in the world, that person has free choice, he has Bechira. The Pasuk says, Vayimolei Ha'aretz Chamos, in the days of Noach, the world became full of Chamos, of injustice. They were immoral, they stole from each other, their Bein Adam Chaveroi, man to man, was terrible. So what happened, says this great Hasidic leader, he says, Ches Mem Samach. You know what happened to the world? The balance of good was totally destroyed. So all you had left from Nachash was Ches, the Nun and the Shin disappeared, and all you had left from Samoel, the Aleph Lamed disappeared, and you had left Mem Samach. That's the word Chamos, Ches Mem Samach. From Nachash you have left Ches, from Samoel you have left Samach Mem Samach, you have the word Chamos. When the world has no balance of Tov at all, the world has to be destroyed. Hashem brings a Mabul to destroy the world. Now Noach is recreating the world. When he's going to be saved with his family and these animals in the Teva, and once the Mabul stops, and Noach is now going to start like the world over again. So Hashem wanted him to bring into the world what was lost. What was lost? Aleph Lamed and Nun Shin. So that's exactly what the dimensions of the Teva were. 300 by 50, 300 is Shin, 50 is Nun, that's the Nun Shin of Nachash, then 30 high, that's Lamed, and it came to a point of one Am on top, that's Aleph Lamed. So you have the Nun Shin that was lost from Nachash, you have the Aleph Lamed that was lost from Samoel. Now Hashem says we're going to put it back into the world. A beautiful pshat. That's why the dimensions were exactly what they were. Nun, Shin, Lamed, Aleph, Lamed, 300 by 50 by 30 by 1. So now we know why it was a small boat, Nes Nister. We know why it's specifically those dimensions. Why did Noah have to work on this boat 120 years? You could build a boat in 2 months, 3 months, a year. 120 years. The answer is in order that the people should see him building it, and they would ask him, Noah, why are you building the boat? Hashem is bringing a mabul unless you do tshuva. Rabbi Friend, I heard this on a tape, and they have it printed also in a piece on Parshas Noach, which is entitled "One Cannot Sell That Which He Does Not Own." If you don't own something, you can't sell it. So he says a very, very interesting thing. And I'm going to read it. He presents it very beautifully. Noah had to convince the people, as we just said, to do tshuva. Noah's efforts in this regard were totally fruitless. Other than his immediate family, no one took heed of his warnings. Let us consider. Noah was the first outreach professional in the history of the world. That was his job. He knew the truth. He knew what Hashem wanted. The entire world was going down the wrong path. And he worked for 120 years to try to convince people of the error of their ways. Now consider a modern day Kiruv organization. Let's say we have here in the OU, the NCSY. Like any organization, they have lay leadership and they have a board of directors. They raise money. They have a payroll. They need to pay for overhead, phone bills, fax machines, office space, and the whole works. Now imagine after 5 years, at a board of directors meeting, the chairman of the board asks the paid Kiruv worker, new, over these past 5 years, how many people have you influenced to become religious? How many people started keeping kosher? The employee responds, none. The lay leaders are incredulous. After 5 years with a budget of $100,000 per year, you have nothing to show for it? Okay, we'll give you 5 more years. After 5 more years and another $500,000, and then in parentheses he says, and perhaps more with salary increases, he says perhaps more. They ask the same question at another meeting. Again, the answer is, no one has been influenced to become more religious from all their outreach efforts. Noah would not have lasted. He was an abysmal failure. He didn't help even one person turn towards Hashem in 120 years. So Rabbi Friend, who has presented this very effectively, he asks, so what went wrong? Why wasn't Noach, in fact, able to convince not even one person besides his own family to do tshuva? So he brings a pshat from Rav Mordechai Kamenetsky. Rav Mordechai Kamenetsky brings a Rashi in Parshas Noach, where Rashi says, Noach miktanei emuna hoya. He wasn't so strong in his belief about the mabul. And Rabbi Fran's going to explain what that means. Maimin ve'enoi maimin. He believed, but he didn't believe. He was shaky. In other words, Rabbi Friend explains, of course, we're speaking, Noach was a ish tzaddik, tomim hoya b'doraisa. It's not like on our low level, but on his great level, and he thought it would never happen. Why? Why would the mabul never happen? Because the people would eventually do tshuva. Hashem couldn't be so midas hadin, justice, to destroy the entire world. It won't happen. When the water started falling and it gets up to his ankle and it starts going up on his thigh and gets near his, and then he starts, finally, Rashi says, from the water that started falling down, that pushed Noah to get in with his family into the teva. He started believing, but he didn't really think it would ever happen. So you can't sell what you don't own. And as if you don't have it yourself, if Noah, for whatever reason, maybe because he had good faith in humanity has to change eventually, whatever the reason is, or Hashem can't be so mean that he's actually going to follow through on his threat to destroy the world. Can't be. God is, Hashem is Rachamon, he has mercy, it can't be. But if you don't have it, you could bang the nails into the teva for 120 years, and you will not change even a single person. This is the reason why Noach was an abysmal failure as the first Kiruv outreach professional. Now let's look to Avram. Avram was born in the year 1948. And when he was 52 years old, the world turned to the year 2000. It was not 1948 when the State of Israel was created. That's according to the Christian counting of 1948. But 1948, from the beginning of Brias HaOlam, Avram was born. When he was 52 years old, it says, we learned it in last week's Parsha, he took with him as HaNefesh Asher Asu B'Chored. He and Sarah created lives. What lives did they create? Avram Megayir as HaNashim. Avram made the Gerim the men. And Sarah Megayir as HaNashim. She made Gioris, she made converts, she made these people believe, she and Avram together. Monotheism, there's only one Hashem in the world, and they became Gerim and Geyoros. And what year was that? When Avram was 52 years old, the world was 2,000 years old. As we've mentioned in other Shiurim, the first 2,000 years of the world are called Soyu Vavoyu. They're empty. There was no Torah. When did Torah start in the world? And there's a lesson here, not when Avram himself began to believe in the Torah, but when Avram was able to give over the Torah to the other people, that they also believed in the Torah, that's when it's considered that the 2,000 years of Torah began, from the year 2000 till the year 4,000. The last 2,000 years of the world, which we are living in today, that's called Yemos HaMashiach. Those are the days of Mashiach. But anyway, the 2,000 years of Torah began not at Har Sinai, which was a few hundred years later, when they left Mitzrayim. No, it began already when Avram was 52 years old, and he was able to give over belief in Hashem to other people and make them Gerim and Gioris. Now, in this connection, Rav Shimon Schwab Zitzel says a very beautiful pshat, and he says it on a medrash. And I'm going to begin this pshat of Rav Schwab with a question that I asked, and I think with Rav Schwab's pshat, we can give the answer. I have this written in my sefer, Or HaOros, if anybody wants to look it up, on Amud Kuf Ayin Gimel. The question is from a Rashi. Rashi, at the end of Parshas Lech Lecha, when Yitzchak is born, and Hashem tells Avram to call his son Yitzchak, Rashi gives an explanation. What does the word Yitzchak mean? And he brings a Chazal. The word, according to one pshat in Chazal, the word Yitzchak stands for four other words. Yud is Asor in the Sionos, the 10 Nisyonos. The Tzaddik is 90, equals a numeric value of 90. This is how old Sarah was when she gave birth to Avram, 90 years old. The Ches stands for the 8 days of Milah, when Yitzchak received Bris Milah. And the Kuf is 100 numerically, which stands for how old Avram was when he had a child, Yitzchak. So the question on this Rashi Chazal is that the last three letters, we understand what it has to do with Yitzchak. His father was 100, Kuf, his mother was 90, Tzaddik, he had a Bris Milah on the 8th day, Ches, very good. What's the Yud? Asor and the Sioinus. What did the 10 trials that Avram had? That's what Avram had. What did that have to do with Yitzchak? The only trial that Yitzchak was involved in was Akedas Yitzchak, when he was 37 years old, and he was ready to give up his life for Hashem. Okay. He it was an Esayon, a test for his father Avram, and it was also a test for the son Yitzchak. But his Nisyonis are one, Akedas Yitzchak. So maybe his name should have been Etzchak. The Aleph would be the one of the 10 Nisyonis that had to do with Yitzchak. But what are you using the word Yud, the letter Yud, for the Asar Nisyonis that has nothing to do with Yitzchak? So the answer, I believe, it fits in beautifully with what Rav Schwab said. The Chazal say, Gemara in Sanhedrin, Daf Pei Tes Amid Beis, on the Pasuk, in this week's Parsha, which is Vayera, in this week's Parsha, at the end of the Parsha, it says, Vayoymer kach no es pinchas yichidcha, asher ahavta es yitzchak. Hashem said, please take your son that you love, Yitzchak, and bring him up on the Akedah. Chazal say, Amar Rav Shimon Bar Abba, Ein no el lashon bakasha. No means pleading, please. Moshe lemelech, Hashem was pleading with Avram. It's an example of a king. Balak Basav Adam, a king of flesh and blood, an earthly king. Sha'amdu alav milchames harbe. There were many wars that he was involved in. V'hoyulai gibor echad v'natzchan. And he had one general, a very good general, who defeated all the enemies of the king. He won all the battles of the king. Liyamim, as time passed on, amdu alav milchama chazaka. The king was faced with his most ferocious enemy, a very tough battle. Amar Loi, the king said to his trusted general, Bivakoshim imcha, I'm pleading with you, Amod liba mochamazu, stick with me in this battle, Shalo Yoimru, that my enemy should not say, Rishoina ein bemamish. The first battles that this general won, they were nothing. That was an easy enemy. Of course he won. But when it came to the tough battle, there he was defeated. Atha Kodesh Baruch Hu Amar Avram, Hashem said to Avram, Nesesicha bekama nesyonos. I gave you 9 other nesyonos. V'amadita bekulon. And you were all made in all of them. You survived all faithfully to Hashem. Achshav, now, I'm giving you the Akedah. Amod li b'nisayin zeh. Stick with me in this nisayin. Shelo yoimru, that the Satan, the Omisoylam, the nations of the world should not say, Ein mamish b'rishayinim. The first tests were nothing. So this is the toughest test. Just like the general, the king was pleading, please win, fight and win this last war. The same by you, fight and win this last nisayon. They shouldn't say the first ones were nothing. The question Rav Schwab asks is, what do you mean the first ones were nothing? Being thrown into the Kivshon Ha'esh, the fire Nimrod threw Avram into a fire. There was a hunger in the land. There was the nisayon of Lech Lecha. All the other 9 nisayonis were very, very hard nisayonis. Why, if Avram would fail the last one, would they say that the first ones were nothing? Maybe he failed the last one, but the 9 that he passed, they were very good Nisharinas, very tough Nisharinas. They were something to them. They weren't maybe like the Akedah, but they were still, you can't say they were nothing. Says Rav Schwab, no. If they wouldn't have passed the 10th Nisayan, they could have said legitimately the first ones were nothing. Why? Because the first 9, says Rav Schwab, did not involve Yitzchak. If a father, as much as he accomplishes in Yiddishkeit, cannot pass on his Yiddishkeit to his child, then people can say, yeah, you did it, but you weren't passionate enough to give it over to your son. It was only the 10th one, where Yitzhak wasn't a baby, he was 37 years old. Vayelchu shneim yachdav. They both went together. Yitzhak knew what was happening to him. He's going to have to be on the altar brought as a sacrifice. And he had his father's mesiras nefesh. He was willing to give up his life for what they thought was Hashem's command to be killed on the Mizbeach. When the father is able, through his passion, to give over his Yiddishkeit to his child, then that the last Nisayan verifies and validates the first 9. Now I see that the first 9 were meaningful. They were real. Those first 9, because why? Because in the 10th one I saw you were able to give it over to your son Yitzhak. Had you not given it over to your son Yitzhak, then even the first 9 would not be considered valuable, would not be considered yesh ben mamish. So it comes out when Yitzchak was omed in the Nisoyan of the 10th one of the Akedah, that validates all the other 9. The other 9 are mamish. They were also excellent Nisoyanists that you were omed because you were so passionate about the first 9, you were able to give it over that your son should succeed with you together in the 10th one. So according to this pshat of Rav Schwab, it's a very well answered why his name was Yitzchak, not Etzchak. Because he not only was all made in the 10th Nisayan, he validated all the other 9 through his being all made in the 10th one. All 10 have a connection with Yitzchak, because through him they were validated. I said also that's why his name was not Tzichaki. Put the Yud at the end. Why are you putting the Yud at the beginning, Yitzchak? The answer is because Tzadik Ches Kuf, whose Mesiris Nefesh was there? That was the father, the parents. They had a child. Imagine, at 190, having a, I'm almost 60, Kanai Nahara.
The age was different.
Yeah, that's true. The age was different, but still, to have, to raise children when you get older, and to have a young child, a baby at 190, that's a mysterious nefesh of the parents. And the bris milah, the child cries at every bris because it has tsar, but that's, it has no knowledge at that time yet. The parents, says the Medrash Tachum in Parshat Tzaveh, who see the blood of their child being spilled, and they're willing to let the have a bris milah because Hashem asks, that's a mysterious nefesh of the parents. So the lesson to Yitzchak is that yud, which shows your mysterious nefesh, that has to be based on the tzadik ches kuf of your parents, but you have to be first. You can't be at the end. A person has to base his love for Yiddishkeit, his mesiras nefesh for Yiddishkeit, on that which his parents have done and provided for him. But he has to be at the forefront. He has to do his own mesiras nefesh. So when Yitzchak showed his own mesiras nefesh at the Akedah, that validated all the other nine nesiyonos, and that was based on the mesiras nefesh of his parents, but he took the forefront of continuing it into the next generation. So therefore, here we have already the chilek, one difference between Avram and Noach. The difference is Noach was not passionate about what he believed. He was maimon, ve'ena maimon. He was shaky. If you don't have it, you can't sell it. He was not successful. His own family, they came in with him, but, you know, maybe, you know, let's go with the old man, you know, maybe there is a, you know, why not take a chance? That much he affected. Why, you know, we'll go into the boat. The worst, we'll have a boat ride. We'll have, so they went in with the, but he was, did anyone else except his family, he couldn't give it over. Avram was able to give over his mysterious nefesh to his child to give up his life for Hashem. And not only that, he affected Gerim and Geyoros, as we saw, HaNefesh Asher Osu B'charen. That's because Avram was passionate in his Yiddishkeit. He was able to give it over to his son, to others, to strangers, and that is the chilek number one. And the chilek number two between Noach and Avram, we will leave Yemir Tashem for the next year.